This is episode one of Make Your Wedding a Highlight. My name is DJ Josh from Highlight Weddings and Events. My guest today is Kaylee Lavach, owner of Silver Shade Studios.
If you're getting ready to or already in the process of planning your wedding, you've come to the right place. DJ Josh, owner of Highlight Weddings and Events, interviews other local 30A wedding pros to offer insight about how to make your wedding a highlight.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
My pleasure. When did we first meet? We met at, was it Tuesdays Together? Was that the first time we met?
Probably, because that's kind of, I did a lot of networking when I first moved here, and I'm sure that that's where I met you and a lot of other wedding vendors, but we officed together for a little bit at one point.
That's right. That's right.
But I think it was networking where we first actually met.
Mm-hmm. And just so you know, Tuesdays Together is a networking group that's associated with the Rising Tide Society, which is a national networking event for wedding professionals and wedding companies. So we'll just start by talking weddings. How did you get into wedding videography?
So I have a story that's much different than most people who start their own business. So when I graduated college at 21, I started working for an advertising agency that had a wedding division. And that separate company did DJ and videography services in Nebraska. And we really had almost no weddings on the books at the time, maybe like six a year. And they hired me to help them do some marketing. I came in, I was hourly, 40 hours a week, trying to generate business, do bridal shows, talk to brides, all of that. Well, I quickly realized in the corporate world, I wasn't getting approval for money in time for bridal shows and things like that, and essentially couldn't do my job. So at the 3-month mark, the owner came to me and said, I would like to move to Omaha and I want you to take the company from me. So he pushed very quickly for me to buy it. I wasn't prepared. I was young. It seemed like a good investment. So my parents backed me. We bought this company only to find out it had a terrible reputation in town. All the equipment was old. I did have a staff, but I fired them all. So I really would have been better off if I had started from scratch. And when I went to a lawyer about whether or not I should change the name and trademark and all that, he pushed me to do that. But I didn't want... The reason I bought it was for the name and the brand. So I just spent the next 3-4 years reversing that. And after I fired the staff, I had to shoot a wedding. So I brought home a camera on Friday and I shot a wedding on Saturday with no prior experience. And that was 14 years ago. So slow growth. I had to train myself, learn the equipment, learn how to edit. I went to a lot of classes, took, you know, a lot of teaching, all kinds of things just to learn and be the best I could. And here we are 14 years later and I'm still doing it.
That's awesome. I think it's interesting looking back. You can kind of see like how you would do things differently, but I'm a firm believer that you are not the person you are now without everything that you go through. Like my experience is like, I've done so many different jobs and careers until I became a wedding DJ. And I think that they just helped me kind of help shape me and made me more mature and more ready for being able to start my own company. So I definitely appreciate the journey as much as getting to where you are currently.
For sure. And I always joke because I don't think that if I had done that same experience at 31 instead of 21, that I would have had the same resiliency, because of those six weddings, when I took it over, he didn't deliver. So those brides came back and said, I have a contract with your company and I need my wedding video. And I had never seen them. I never saw their footage. I didn't go to their wedding. I was in no part connected, but the contract was in my business name. So I was under my desk crying, like 22 years old, like, what am I going to do? But I fought, like it lit the fire under me. And I said, he cashed my check and disappeared knowing I was going to fail, that he set me up for failure. And that fueled me. Because I knew that he was just down the road in another town, and my goal was for him to hear his business name in that city. I was doing close to 200 weddings a year at my peak, and people in Omaha were using me, and he was like, I can't believe that you did this. I mean, he actually came back and said, I never expected you to grow it like this. And I was basically like, well, it was your fault, you know?
Right.
But it lit that fire, and, you know, I definitely wouldn't be where I was today if that didn't happen.
That's a really cool story. And like, just so listeners know, I have never heard your origin story about how you started in the wedding industry. So that's really cool. Thanks for sharing. We'll talk about specifically videography. How would you describe your style? I know in photography, there's like some photographers like bright colors, some like more hushed tones. How would you describe your style to a client who's looking to book you?
Yeah, so mine is very timeless in the sense of I want the colors to be exactly what they were on the day. So I like vibrant, well-lit, but no filters or presets, or I'm not going to change the greens to be moody or anything like that. I want you to watch the video in 30 or 40 years and still have it be exactly how the day was and how you remembered it. I think that photography, they can get more creative and fun like that, but with video, I just want it to be timeless. And so same with my editing, it's still very traditional. I will keep up with the trends and different editing styles and things like that to a minimum to add some flair to it, but the overall video is still very traditional.
Cool. How would you describe your ideal client?
I really enjoy working with people who really value the memories of the day. You know, they put a lot of thought and effort into the decor and the details and defining it all, but then also who they invite is who really matters to them. And so my ideal client really enjoys being able to look back on the happiest day of their life and relive that in a way that photos can't.
Mm-hmm. I've actually told a couple of friends of mine that are in the process of planning their wedding that it's actually better to have a smaller guest count and make sure that those are the people that really, really want to be there versus inviting people that, oh, if I invite this person, then I have to invite this person, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's just, the celebration is just more authentic anyway. Like they're there because they are super happy for the couple and not just because they're going to get a free meal and it's going to be a great time. So I firmly believe that if you are more selective, the overall wedding will be better for it.
Yeah. Nothing is more frustrating or confusing than having a bride come back and ask for certain people to be removed from the video because they were a guest that brought a date or something and they didn't know that person or they don't want them there. And that is very tough for photo or video because we assume everybody there matters to you. Mm. And so if those three people are lighting up the dance floor and no one else is, but you don't know them, that just makes it very tough for us. So the wedding that I just was in, she did not do plus ones unless you were in a relationship. Mm. So that can be tricky and tough, but she really wanted it to be small and intimate and people who mattered to her.
Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks to where weddings are now, where they're more customizable, especially not in the 30A area. They're not as traditional. You can really make it about the couple. And I think it's better that way because you're not having to make decisions and take into account, oh, what does my grandfather or my aunt think? You can really just be like, no, this is what we want. I think if people love and care about the couple, they're going to respect that. Next question. What is a question or questions that everyone booking a videographer should ask but few do?
Probably deliverables. So I understand in the video world, it's a little confusing because we all call things differently, but I see a lot of trending problems or opportunities where a couple will receive their wedding film and it's only 5 minutes long and they were expecting 20, 30, 40 minutes long. If that's your expectation and there's a miscommunication between the bride and the videographer, that's always like such a heartbreak in the end. So really kind of nailing down with whoever you hire, what am I getting after the wedding? Knowing that is going to save you the heartbreak from expecting this long video of your day and only getting something small. And also like what add-ons are there? Am I able to purchase the entire ceremony from start to finish or is that included? Or can I purchase the toasts or can I get raw footage? It's really understanding what we offer and what we can give you. Everybody's very familiar with photos where we get a sneak peek online and we get our full gallery and then we get an album. But with video, it's broken down into so many different ways and what people will offer or give you. And I personally think it's important to have all of those memories. I give you the highlight film, but I also give you the ceremony and the toast and the dances, because those are memories I want you to have. And I don't think that you should have to add those on.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's interesting to me that that's not something that is discussed during even like the pre-booking or even once the client's been booked. To me, I would think that would either come from the couple or the videographer. But I think that speaks to how seldom videography is used in weddings as well. So it's not as common as you said, photography.
Sure. Or they see the highlight film online and that's what they have in their brain, but they don't know to ask for more or they don't realize they're not getting it. So that's probably one of the biggest miscommunications. And part of that for us is just this market that we're in. If you're using a wedding planner to book your vendors, that could get lost in the shuffle with what am I getting? Oh, I'll have someone to capture my day, but they don't ask what they're getting on the back end. Mm-hmm.
So what are things clients can do to help you make their video the best it can be?
This is also something we never talk about before the wedding, but should be talked about. Lighting is huge, and I don't notice this as much down here, but in the Midwest, oftentimes people get ready in small, dark church basements, or they'll find a tiny bathroom in the middle of the house to do makeup in. And really, finding like a huge living room, dining room space that has windows all around and people can gather and hang out is a much better option than separating people to this bathroom for makeup, downstairs in the kitchen for hair, that sort of thing. Not only is that great for prep, but we have to shoot details in that location. We're shooting the dress and the shoes and the rings and all of that extra stuff. And if we don't have a beautiful place to do that at, it makes it that much tougher.
So let's assume that the venue, that's kind of what you're given. Are there any ways that you can overcome that obstacle to really make it better? Would you like pick a different location to do like the accent shots, or like how would you deal with something like that?
Yeah. So if the venue said you can get ready here, personally, if I went there and I looked at it and saw that the bride's room or the groom's room were very dark, I might suggest getting a hotel room for one day just for people, or going to a salon for hair and makeup. Usually the lighting is better in those locations and it gives you more freedom to look for cool spots or even outdoors to hang the dress or just to make the overall product better. And I think a lot of times brides think, well, it's just getting ready. It's not going to add that much to it. But really, that's our time to get all of the details and get some stuff with you and your mom and for you to open the gift and read the letter and all of these things that kind of set the tone for the film. Most of us open with some sort of detail shots of flowers or something, and having that great lighting is really key. Mm-hmm.
I've noticed that a lot of barn venues, they will have like basically it looks like a salon where they have the light bulbs around the mirrors, which is really cool. And they also have both bride and groom areas they just go and like kind of hang out at.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
And audio is another big key, but there isn't much the bride can do on that end except for let us be prepared, which is half our job too for asking the right questions, but making sure the DJ or the band is aware that a video will be present and they need to record sound and toasts. And so many DJs are great about that. When it comes to bands, if they don't bring a sound guy, a lot of times they don't know their system well enough to know. And that's a struggle to get them to trust me. Like, hey, I've been doing this for so long. I know which one I need to plug into. Just trust me. And if they don't, it makes my job way tougher because then I have to try to rig something in front of a speaker or mic the person talking. And it's extra work. And that's more avenues to fail. So if a guest knocks over the one in front of the speaker or the batteries go out in the lav mic, there's so many more steps where if we could plug in and take that feed, it would be so much easier for everybody.
I can kind of relate to what the band's going through though, because I definitely would, especially if I've never worked with the person before, I'm like, I'm not sure you actually know what you're doing kind of thing. So I think something that would help that, and that's something I've been really intentional about doing, is reaching out to like the photographer, videographer, any people that I'm going to be interfacing throughout the day. So it's not just I show up and be like, oh, hey, Kaylee, or I would probably call you Callie if I didn't know you. We're working a wedding today. This is going to be great. There's actually, you've built a relationship. I can also be like, hey, are there any things that you need for the day of the wedding? So I can basically set you up for success. And then because the way an event is, if everyone looks great, the event looks even better kind of thing.
Yeah, that actually leads right into another reason why it's a great idea to hire a local vendor if you're doing a destination wedding versus flying someone in. If you and I worked a wedding together, that trust is there because we've worked many weddings together. But if someone came in from the outside, like you just said, and you don't know them, it's that much tougher. So often communication before the wedding is non-existent, which we all should try to do better at as vendors. But working with sort of the same people every weekend to some degree builds that level of trust. And you know that I'm not going to plug into your system to do anything to mess you up.
Right. Well, and there's also familiarity with the venue. Mm-hmm. I always try to do a site inspection before an event, even if I've been there, but it's been a while. For instance, the Island on Okaloosa Island used to be the Ramada Inn, and the layout's similar, but I did an event there for a charity gala, and I hadn't been there since they did the refresh and the renovation kind of stuff. So it's just good to walk it and make sure, okay, here's where all the power is. And the same thing I would imagine for a videographer, you can kind of mentally map out, okay, we're going to do these shots here. This would be good locations for that kind of thing.
Definitely. And even when people travel from the Midwest, shooting on the beach. For someone like us, the beach and the sun reflecting off the white sand is a completely different animal than shooting outdoor weddings in the grass over and over every weekend. And I think a lot of people don't think that through when they bring someone down. Skin tones are different, black skin, white skin, tan. I mean, it's all different in the way the sun reflects off it and the way that you need to be exposed and have your settings. And having somebody familiar with the way we do things here is a huge plus for your final product.
Mm-hmm. And there's also the issue with audio on the beach, because
that too.
Sometimes it's not windy, but most of the times the wind rips off the water. So you have to factor that in as well.
Mm-hmm.
What are at least three reasons a couple will regret not hiring a videographer for their wedding?
This is one of my favorite questions because I've been doing it for so long and I'm so passionate about it. I have lost count of the number of times someone says, well, we're not going to get one because we're never going to watch it. And to that I say, the wedding video is really not for you. It's for your parents. It's for your kids. It's for your grandparents. It's for the day that you're a grandparent. How many of us would sit here and say, if you went home for Christmas and mom or grandma put their wedding film on the TV, that you wouldn't be dying to watch it? We all want to see that. And we want to make fun of what they were wearing and their hairstyles. And, you know, that's a realistic point of view. Most of us would want to watch that. So to take yourself out of it, even if you don't watch it for 15 years, you will be glad you have it someday. And so I would say the second one, to remember the voices of those closest to you. Over the years, I've had a lot of people email me thanking me, you know, 2 years later because their best man passed away or their niece or nephew got in a car accident and they're not sure they're going to make it. But they have this professional quality video where they get to watch them and hear them just like they're still here. The same could be said for your parents, you know, watching the father-daughter dance back or watching dad give his speech or walk you down the aisle are memories that are completely different than just a still image of somebody. I think with still images, because we can take them on our iPhones and it's so easy for us now that we don't think about them in the same way anymore. And video is just a whole other element of memory and movement and getting to feel like they're actually still here when you watch them. And then for number three, I would say so many times people come back and say, you caught so many things that were happening that I didn't even know happened. And part of this is one, being experienced in weddings, so you kind of know to watch for stuff, but two, having two shooters. So one person is getting all the main major event stuff, and the second person is getting details of people or reactions, you know, whatever the flower girl is doing, or mom and dad embracing, or crying, or hugging, or mom's reaction while you read the letter. Just little stuff that you're in your moment, and I'm out here capturing what's happening around you. So again, a photographer can do some of that as well, but it's so different to see the full moment instead of just a snippet of the moment.
I think actually two things came up while you were talking about that. I am a wedding DJ, but my favorite part of weddings is the toast, actually. You never know what you're going to get. Sometimes they're funny. Sometimes they're sentimental. Sometimes they're just making fun of either the bride or the groom or both of them. But you can kind of remember snippets of it, but having that captured like is invaluable. Like they could send you the written out part, but a lot of people just wing it anyway. So being able to have that for forever, like it's a really cool thing. Like if the groom's like, oh, babe, remember our toast? And then like just having, like just surprising him with it. I can actually give my personal experience from my wedding. Rhoda and I, we met, Rhoda, my wife, we met at a live jazz and blues spot. That was where our relationship started. So when we were getting married, we had a lot of friends that were really super talented. And for our dinner, it ended up being a show. Like I think we had like six or seven different guests or couples that performed, and we didn't have video. And Rhoda, to this day, she says the one thing she regrets is that we didn't have video of it. We also learned a choreographed dance that I don't remember the choreography to. And like you said, there's just so many different things going on. You don't realize how much happens in a wedding until it is your wedding. And you're like, okay, we got the cake cut. Now we got to go over here. And you're constantly going in different directions. And just being in the moment is challenging enough. And then looking back and trying to remember everything is even harder. I think that videography should be included with photography. Like, they both provide different things and they both complement each other and capture memories differently.
Mm-hmm. It should never be a competition or a one or the other, because they really are totally separate things and totally separate ways to remember. If you've ever in your life had a dance recital or a school concert where mom or dad filmed it on the VHS and then you put it in, if you remember that feeling of looking at it, it's a completely separate point of view. You're in it in the moment, but you don't get to see the whole picture. And that's kind of what video does for the wedding, is you get to see how everything comes together while you're in the center of it. So
now that we've gotten to know Kaylee, the wedding pro, do you mind if I ask you a few other personal questions?
Sure.
So the first question is, what is the best compliment someone has ever given you?
Honestly, the thing that always makes my day is when a bride or a mother of the bride responds and just says, oh my gosh, this was amazing. I cannot believe how much you captured. All of these things I didn't know happened. I'm going to cherish this forever. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Like, those emails just reinforce why I do what I do. And I think that just speaks to, you know, my experience level and my passion for this job. So those compliments I will take every single day.
If you could talk to your younger self as you're establishing or starting the company, what would you tell young Kaylee?
From my first business or this current business?
Either one.
That no matter how bad it gets, it's always going to get better. And I'm going to try to remember, my mom said when I was kind of in the first few years of business, I worked really hard to build this brand and to get quality brides and do all of this. And then the people, you know, that you hire are a direct reflection of you. And obviously I can't DJ 3 weddings in a Saturday and shoot a wedding. So I had a team, and I remember the first time that I had an issue and a DJ no-showed a wedding. And that was the end of my world. I mean, I was shooting video at another wedding, and I was having to call and text and find anybody in the vicinity that had gear that could show up. And I literally thought my world was over, that nobody was ever going to book me again. I had ruined someone's day. And this wasn't any wedding. This bride planned her dinner table so that the way the tables were dismissed for dinner was planned around music. The DJ had certain songs to play for certain tables. So this one really hit me hard. And my mom said, it's not a matter of if it happens again, it's when. And she's like, you can never control all of your employees and your staff. You just have to do the best you can to hire them. And I've kind of taken that mentality the rest of the years in business, that like, it's not if something bad happens, it's when. And so you just kind of have to prepare for that. Mm-hmm. And I wish like that I had known that no matter what and how prepared you are and how much effort you put into this, like, something can still go wrong and you're gonna be okay. Like, I called them, I apologized, we worked it out. I never got a bad review from it. I'm sure that they told people and word spread, but it didn't stop people from booking me. So you could feel that your world is over. It's still always gonna turn back around and be better.
Well, it's the same thing DJing a wedding. Sometimes stuff just happens. I do my best not to let the guests know that something has gone wrong. But I think if they realize, oh, that wasn't necessarily how it was supposed to happen, but you have the grace and can recover and continue, I think that lets everyone, and not just the guests or the couple or but the staff as well, they're like, oh, he's got it. He's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And it's really about not necessarily what happens, but how you respond and how you keep the flow of the evening going.
Yeah, it speaks a lot to your character and who you are as a person. Because then on the flip side, I had a DJ that showed up at the wedding and took the wrong speaker cords. So they didn't fit the speakers that he brought. But this guy was so personable and such a great communicator with people that it took 2 hours for somebody or for him, I don't remember, to go back to the studio, get replacements and come back, that they didn't have music. And somehow he pulled the night off. He got the right chords. They tipped him $200, 5-star review. Wow. He communicated the problem. He said he was going to fix it. He fixed it. And then he gave him one hell of a party. And so that speaks to his character, but he could have given up. He could have been upset, ruined his night, ruined their night. And instead he just realized there was a problem, figured out a solution, and then did an amazing job after that. Mm-hmm. So conflict is all in how you handle it.
Yeah. And actually that makes me think of, there's another DJ in the area. His thing is, a DJ is a manager of chaos.
That's so true.
And it's pretty much any wedding professional is, to an extent. You have to realize that events sometimes get chaotic and things don't happen as they should, because we're all humans. And
yeah, we all deal with it in different ways on a wedding day. Mm-hmm. There's so many times where something will happen or something goes wrong, or I've had a photographer lose the wedding ring when he was shooting it one time. And all of us know behind the scenes what's happening, and we're all trying to manage the chaos and figure out the solution before the bride finds out. And I've can't even count the number of times that I've gone through stuff like that on wedding days over the last 14 years.
All right. So last two questions. So I took a brief time and scoured your website and looked at your About Me. Since you've been playing golf since you were 5, what's your handicap?
Oh my God, you're going to hate this answer, because I've been playing golf since I was 5 and I'm not even sure how to figure a handicap. I played it all through high school. We went to state. I did all these tournaments, and I'm still I don't know how to figure a handicap. And that's probably one of those little known facts about me. I know every other rule in the game of golf. I know what you can and can't do. And I'm so confused about the handicap thing. So
I think I've technically been playing probably about that long, because my grandpa, he lived on a golf course, and we would go down to it was a suburb of Miami.
Okay.
I grew up in this area, so we would go down there for Christmas and he would take me on the golf course. But I'm horrible. I don't have the time to practice. So
can you tell me how to figure a handicap?
Yeah, you take an aggregate of your scores, and then the difference between what par is and then your score is your handicap. So you have to play the same course multiple times. So if you routinely shot 12 over, plus 12 will be your, or is it minus 12? Minus 12 will be your handicap. It's a way to make it so that you can compete with different skill leveled players.
Okay. Yeah. So 10 to 12 roughly, because I'm usually 10 to 12 over.
You're pretty good. I'm a 40 or something like that. And probably worse now, because I haven't played, and I basically only play whenever my brothers get together.
Yeah, I don't play as often now, but I feel like when I get back on the course, it comes back like riding a bike. And then, of course, my boyfriend's very competitive and he's never played golf a day in his life except Top Golf. And he's always like, I'm going to beat you. I can do this. Doesn't know anything about how far you hit a 7-iron or a driver or anything. And we've played 2 or 3 times and he is he can shoot 10 to 15 over par. And I'm like,
wow.
Who are you? Nobody can play golf like this.
That's really good.
But it's his competitive nature that he figures it out. And he still doesn't know what club to use, but he knows he's got to get the ball to the green, and it works somehow.
Right. Yeah, that's the hard part about golf, is knowing how far each club is. That's for another podcast.
Yes, yes, yes.
Last question. We're going to talk about shoes. How many shoes do you own? And do you have a favorite pair or pairs?
So this is really funny. In Nebraska, I easily had 150 pairs of shoes at one point. I worked at Dillard's in the shoe department. I was obsessed. I tried on new shipments every time they came in. I bought them when they went on sale with my discount and loved them. I would wear a different pair of colorful, crazy high heels or boots every day. Now, when I moved to Florida, that's not really this culture here. Mm-hmm. And it might be in some cities, but it's definitely not in our Destin area. We are very much flip-flops, sneakers, casual. So it was a little bit of an adjustment, because I would visit and bring all these shoes, and then we would go to a beach bar, or we'd go somewhere that you'd walk through sand or by boats on the docks, and you just can't wear heels in that environment. So slowly I've transitioned away, and I've probably got 60-ish pairs right now, which is still a lot.
That is still a lot.
There's just some pairs of heels I could never get rid of. I have a hot pink pair that's probably my favorite.
Well, it matches your hair, right?
My hot pink hair and my fingernails are hot pink, but I can wear those with a black dress if I'm speaking at something or we're going somewhere a little bit fancier and be okay. But most of what I've switched to now are like cute, glittery, strappy sandals or the Chucks that I have on today, because it's just very much the culture here. And I feel overdressed if I have on my heels or my boots or something like that. So,
all right. Any last thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
I don't think so. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad we decided to chat today about this, and I could talk about weddings and stories all day long. So maybe another one later in the season for that.
Maybe.
And they can find me online at silvershadestudios.com or on Instagram, silvershadestudios. I'd love for anybody to check me out there.
Again, Kaylee, thanks for stopping by. There is going to be more to come. Thanks for telling prospective clients how to make their wedding a highlight.
Thanks for stopping by and checking out the podcast. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and leave a review. It'll help other couples just like you find it. For more resources, including our helpful blog, check highlightweddingsandevents.com. Highlightweddingsandevents.com. And make your wedding a highlight.